This is the PR Podcast, a show about how public relations helps you tell your story to the world. We talk with great PR practitioners who have the skills, creativity, and just plain savvy to get their clients noticed. Now here's your host, Jody Fisher.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the PR Podcast. I'm Jody Fisher. Thanks for joining us. Well, don't forget to join me on Instagram live every Thursday at 2 p.m. We do just about a 15-minute Instagram live here from the PR Garage, where we talk about the news of the day, the PR observations of the day. I play a little game called Why Is That News?, where I take a look at a story that's playing locally in my market. And I sort of dissect it and describe why I think it made the newspaper, why it made TV, and what the PR thought process was going into that. And I want to hear from you guys, absolutely. So tune into that every Thursday, 2 p.m. Eastern on Instagram Live. That's on my handle, at Jody Fisher. Now let's get on with our show for today. We got a really special guest. Ed Sweeting is a senior photojournalist with News 12. Now, Ed has done it all. He's covered some of the biggest stories and created some of the most iconic moving images of the last three decades. Now, whether it's shooting video for a reporter package, running and gunning as a VO cam, producing under deadline, or running live shot, Ed's professionalism and keen eye for what looks good on TV and gets the job done puts him at the top of his game. He's also an award-winning barbecue chef running Big Ed's Sweet Smoke Barbecue, where he's competed in contests across the Northeast. And I know we're going to talk about that. Ed, welcome to the PR Podcast.
Hi, Jody. Thanks for inviting me.
Thanks for being here. So how'd you get started in news? Take it back to the beginning. What got you bit by the bug?
Well, actually, I just needed a job. I had got an associate's degree in video and film down in Orlando, and I wound up coming back home to Long Island. I grew up born and raised out here in Islip, and came back home to Long Island and needed a job. Put a couple of applications out, and I landed at TV 55. That was in 95, the summer of the wildfires, the Hamptons wildfires. Yes. out east. And I was there for about 3 years, and then I started News 12 in 98, and I've been there ever since.
It takes a special personality and a really specific kind of personality to do the job that you and other videographers do. For number one, you're the equipment guy, right? I mean, you are carrying the camera, you're making the truck work, you're making everything that makes the TV image work, right? You are looking through that lens and you are finding the images that are going to be just the right images to go with the story. Tell me about the experience of actually being a videographer and sort of, carrying that camera around and looking for those right images.
Well, it has gotten lighter over the years, but it's still a dinosaur. I mean, nobody really needs those big production cameras anymore, but we still do have them. Everybody's got a 4K camera in their pocket nowadays. So it's definitely, the world has changed. But I mean, just finding the stories, telling a story. I'm normally, the beginning of my career, I'd be working with reporters as partners, and they'd be telling stories with their words. And I had to tell that same story with pictures to go with their words. And sometimes it didn't mesh, but on the good times, on the good days, it does mesh very well. And you always got to find that moment. Your head's got to be on a swivel. You got to be looking around for those emotional moments, or you have to be almost a clairvoyant to know what's going to happen next, where to be in the correct position to capture that moment that hasn't happened yet. And that just comes with experience. It's kind of a hard thing to teach. I train a lot of the new photogs that come through News 12, and teaching them situational awareness, knowing that there is more stuff going on other than what's in the lens or what's in your viewfinder. Your head's got to be moving around to see what's next, what am I missing, what's happening that I'm not capturing that I need to capture to tell that story.
Yeah, you and I both know that being out in the field when you're covering sort of news that is breaking as opposed to something that's planned, like a press conference, so you kind of know what you're going into. But even maybe not, and you tell me your story here. A little bit of it is luck, but a lot of it is what you just described, that situational awareness. Making sure that you're in the right place at the right time for the action that you want to capture to happen. It's kind of the old thing of saying, you know, being struck by lightning, you got to know where to stand, right?
Exactly. You have to know, it kind of just comes with experience or just kind of feeling the story. Every story is going to be different. That's one of the best parts about my job is every day is different. I'm doing different things with different people, meeting different people, but it's always different, but in somehow it kind of falls into a pattern that you kind of have to, you know, just recognize. And it just comes with experience doing this for almost, you know, close to 30 years. I just kind of know the pattern. It's just almost instinct now that, but you gotta be, like I said, you gotta be in the right place at the right time, but you have to know it's coming. Like, you know, just getting the emotions and getting the interact, like a meeting, like a soldier coming home or hugging, you know, seeing their child, surprising them at school, things like that. You just need to know to be in the right spot, because that's not going to happen again. You have to capture that moment while it's happening, because it's not going to happen again. And if you miss it, it's gone forever.
Yeah, that is a great point too. In addition, I guess, to putting your place in the right place at the right time, to kind of anticipate and know where the action is going to happen, is to then, when you see it happen, to actually go for it, right? I mean, you can't, as a camera operator, you can't stand back and sort of be respectful or you know, be a fly on the wall. You actually have to get right in there, right?
You know, that's tricky situations, because sometimes it's, you know, you want to be respectful. You want to be in moments mm-hmm. of emotional moments when real mm-hmm. human things are happening. You want to capture that, but you also don't want to be intrusive. I mean, so it's a very fine line. You know, I know a lot of photographers over the years that cross that line, kind of gives us media guys a bad rap sometimes. I try to play as respectful as possible. I don't want to be in people's way. I don't want to be part of the story. I just want to capture the moment. And it's difficult sometimes. I mean, it's sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. And we do the best we can when we're out there. But it's always different, and you're dealing with different personalities that sometimes are part of that action, and they want it to be captured, they want it to be on TV, they want it to be seen. Other times people want to be private and they don't want it and they feel uncomfortable. So you got to read that too. Body language, the person you're shooting, you have to kind of sense that. I mean, it's a hard thing to teach, and there's no easy formula. You just have to kind of read the room, as they say.
Yeah, for sure. When you show up to a scene, whether it's breaking news or whether you kind of know what's going to happen, right? There's a media advisory and it's a press conference, or it's sort of a planned thing. What are you thinking about? What are you looking for? What are you keeping your antenna or your radar up for?
Totally two different things. Breaking news, I'm going to a fire or something like that. Of course, I'm getting the action. I want to stay out of people's way. I don't want to interfere with the fire guys doing their thing or the police. So I try to stay at a distance, but I also looking... You look not only looking for the action, but you're looking for the neighbors. You're looking for the homeowners. They're sitting someplace looking at this fire, looking at their home on fire, all their memories going, you know, up in smoke, as they say. And they're emotional. But, you know, I'm not going to sit there and jump in someone's face, but I still want to see them. I want to figure out who they are and kind of capture the emotion of the story. I mean, it's a horrific day in their life, and I don't want to make it worse. So it's kind of, you gotta step on eggshells a little bit. You gotta get a close enough to capture it, but not close enough to be intrusive. I mean, those are emotional moments in a breaking news situation, car accident, fire, something horrific. But a press conference, planned event, is another thing. I mean, you have the people at the podium or interview set up, but also what are they talking about? What's the story about? And you have to capture those moments too. You know, county executive is having some sort of proclamation. Who are they talking about? Who are they honoring? So you have to capture them and their family and the emotion of the, you know, trying to capture some emotional part of it for a planned news conference, a planned, you know, it's very methodical and mechanical, but they're honoring somebody. They're honoring somebody or they're recognizing something. And you need to be able to capture, figure out what they're trying to recognize, and try to put that on film. You know, it's not film anymore. It's digital. But you still use the terms, and you're trying to get that emotion or just the humanity. I mean, you know, watching the newsreader just read stories about, and you're unconnected. My job is to try to connect people to the real world, to what is actually happening, who's being affected, and try to capture that in video.
We talked yesterday, because we were together yesterday, about how much you choose to shoot. Because like you said, you know, you're not only capturing the interviews or the people speaking, which you absolutely need, but you got to capture the other stuff, you know, what's typically referred to as B-roll. But it's, as you describe, like the person, you know, in a something like a fire, you know, and the homeowner is sitting there, and you're, that's a legitimate shot that you need to capture. It's not an interview, it's not a SOT or a sound on tape, but it is an integral part of the overall video that you shoot. How much video do you shoot in any given story?
Well, I mean, it depends. I try not to overshoot. The majority of the last couple of years of my job, I have been on VOSOP patrol. So I do the smaller things. I do capture the smaller moments, the smaller stories, and they put a camera person and a reporter on the larger stuff. So sometimes I'm capturing parts of reporter stories, like they can't get to a hospital to talk to a doctor or an interview. I'll do an interview and give it to that crew. Or I'm just doing the smaller stuff, like I said, the VOSATs, which is and just capturing. So editing, I mean, it's what reality in a VOSAT, what's going to wind up on TV is about 30 seconds, maybe 45 seconds. I'm shooting about 6, 7, 8 minutes worth of video to get that 45 seconds. So it's different. If I'm like, now after I've shot it and going back, and if I'm editing it, I know what I've shot. I know what I have. I know what I've captured. Now, recently, in the last couple of years, I feed my stuff in so someone else is looking at it. So they have to go, they don't know what I shot or what I have. They have to go through everything I shot. So the more, if I'm shooting 20 minutes, a half hour, that's, they have to go through that to capture those, you know, that 45 seconds of video that they need. So I try to, as they say, edit in the can. I try not to waste anything. I try not to put anything on tape that's not necessary. I'm not focusing. I'm not doing, I'm not capturing anything. I'm not recording anything that's not necessary. So it's not a waste of time. It's not a waste of their time. It's not a waste of my time. And it just makes the streamlining, especially in a crashing situation, you're up against, you know, the 3 o'clock show, the 5 o'clock show, you have to get something on the air. The less, the cleaner the video is that has been recorded, that you can go through easily and find the things you need, is going to be so much of a time saver later on, especially under the deadline crunch.
A lot of what you do, and a lot of what is in TV, and I guess maybe in print a little bit too, boil down to terms, right? Whether it's acronyms or other things. And we were just talking here about B-roll and VO and VOSOT and things like that. How important is it for PR people like me and others who are asking news outlets and videographers like you to come and cover their stuff? How important is it to be able to communicate in that language with you to sort of paint a picture of what you can expect to get?
They don't need to know the, I chuckle when they get it wrong, when they try to, and they get it wrong, which is kind of funny. And every shop in different places in the country, they probably have their own vernacular that's a little different. But it's not necessary to communicate that. I mean, the PR person's got a job. They're selling a story. They're selling a mission, a business, a fundraiser, something. So they need to make that look good. Now, what we need when we show up to a place, we need a person to explain what this event is. So we need at least one person who can talk about nuts and bolts. If there's someone that is personally involved, like they're raising money for this family or something like that, we need that family. We need that. Like, what's the emotion? How helpful is this organization helping you? You know, what would you be doing without this? But it's not necessary to know the jargon or the, but it's more than just a press conference. I mean, and then sometimes that's all we get. And those are tough stories to sell for TV because you need visuals. I mean, TVs, you know, we have 80-inch TVs in our house, and just seeing a talking head behind a podium for 30 seconds is extremely boring. People are going to tune out. So you need other stuff to go with it other than just a press conference. Just an availability for sound is great, but you need pictures to go with it.
There is so much news out there to cover. And I think with the proliferation of PR people like me constantly sending out information to you guys, to news outlets, you have more than enough to choose from and more than enough to sift through to figure out what you're going to cover in any given day. Does knowing that something is going to be especially visual, setting aside the newsworthy part of it, right? It's either got to be newsworthy or it's not. It's got to be important or it's not. Once you've made that decision, does the visual element or the visual excitement of any given story play into whether or not you decide to cover something?
Unfortunately, I don't get to decide what I'm covering. I have puppet masters. They pull my strings. I show up. I dance around. I do my job. But sure, I mean, the more visual, the more opportunities for exciting, emotional, touching video, I mean, is the story's going to be better. The better the story's going to be. I mean, you know, the ribbon cutting at PC Richards is like, all right, we have an exit, you know, people buying refrigerators. I mean, it's not very stimulating. But those stories are, you know, they run right next to the tragic accident too. I mean, unfortunately, you can't pick and choose. And there is a variety. I mean, there's so much stuff. Like I said, I pick up the smaller stuff out in there, and I can do anything from 3 to 7 stories a day that I am just running from place to place, crisscrossing the county line, and spending a half hour, 45 minutes on a story, shooting 5, 6, 7, 10 minutes worth of stuff, feeding it in, and moving on to the next thing. So sometimes I am in a super rush. Sometimes it's great. I have time to actually dig into something and find those moments or talk to that one person that really makes the story. But it's always, you never know what you're going to get. I mean, it's one thing looking at a press release and or talking to somebody on the phone. Hey, this is what's happening. When you get there, it's going to be totally different. It could be much more exciting or much more visual than you planned. Or it could be that they overselled it and you're going to be standing there, you know, with 3 people in front of a town hall with a, you know, very important story to them. But visually, it's just very boring. So you never know what you're going to get. It's different every day.
Are there stories over the years or experiences over the years that you've had that have stuck with you as particularly impactful from a visual perspective?
Covering 9/11. You know, I did 72 hours covering that. It was always, you know, horrific. Flight 800 out in the bay. Mm-hmm. Horrific. The whole years of following that and dealing with families and the, you know, the anniversaries of that. Sure, I have those things. And then I also have the story that changed my life. You mentioned earlier that I kind of do a barbecue thing. I never did any barbecue or cooking or anything like that. 2011, I spent a weekend with a competition barbecue team doing a Nat Sound piece, which is natural sound, no reporter. So just me and whatever I captured with my camera. I spent the weekend with them. And ever since then, now I own 12 smokers and I might have a problem. But that's the story that changed my life. And it's just hanging out with a barbecue team and just, you know, learning the skill and like what it all takes to do that. And if I wasn't working for News 12 or doing that story, I would have never known. I wouldn't be where I am today.
Well, that's a great segue then. Let's talk about the barbecue because you have a terrific business that has really grown out of a passion of yours, right?
I mean, literally, I wanted to do competitions. I've competed in 5 different competitions. I have 2 coming up this summer. But it all started with that weekend, spending time with the barbecue team. Like, oh, wow, I want to do this. This is cool. I can do this. I'd like to do this. And then now it's blown up with all sorts of, you know, Kingsford Barbecue Pitmasters. It's all over TV and YouTube. And, you know, it is really blown up since then. But it's great. I was just practicing. And doing for parties and doing for Super Bowl and holidays, and I want to practice, and the family can only eat so much, so now I started catering because the more you do it, the better you get at it. So now I kind of started a small catering company, just myself. I cook and I bring it to your backyard, and everybody kind of seems to like it. It's growing. I've been doing it about 1.5 years now, and I just recently acquired a tow along, my 13th smoker. I promised my wife I wouldn't get any more after 10. So I got to 13 before I got the tow along that I can tow in the back of my truck. And I can bring the show on the road now, kind of bring the the bells and whistles to your house instead of just cooking in my house, bringing you great food. Now I can actually bring everything to your house, cook there, and have the whole party barbecue experience at someone's home. And hopefully, knock on wood, it's growing small, small. I still have a full-time job doing work for News 12, but the weekends and different parties and here and there, and it's a nice little side hustle. So far, so good.
It's fantastic. And I know you've got a great following on social media, and we'll get to plug that in just a minute. But just want to sort of acknowledge the fact that how great you are at your job. I know, as having done this for a while in this market, both when I was a reporter and now as a PR person, I know that whenever I'm on a location or on a scene and I know that News 12 is coming and you step out of the truck, I know that whatever is going to get shot, whatever is going to end up on TV is going to look not only look really good, but is also going to tell the story. And I just wanted to say how much I appreciate your work.
Thank you. Thank you. I mean, it's definitely developed over the years. And it depends who I'm with also. I mean, it's when you were the reporter with somebody, you're acting as a team, you're a partner, you talk about the story on the way to the story. Hey, what are we going to, what are we expecting here? Of course, when we get out of the truck, it's probably going to be different, but at least we're on the same page and you're partners, you're a true partnership. Like I said, I'm by myself now, so it's kind of, I'm just winging the whole plan when I get there. But then sometimes over the years, I've worked with reporters and I'm a mere remote control for the camera. And, I'll shoot, point and shoot and do my job, but it's not really a partnership. So it all depends who you're working with. I mean, I've had some incredible reporters that I've worked with over the years who tell stories and compliments, and then the best reporters were discussing after or when we're done shooting after the story. Hey, what did you get? What's good video that they want to incorporate in the story? Like to capture, because they want their story to pop on TV too. They want it to look good. So we discuss like, hey, what did you get? Well, I got this shot, or I got this person crying, or I got this hug. I got this emotional kind of, or that sound of someone saying something. So you have that discussion in the car on the way back, or, if we're in the car, just logging out in the field, and you communicate. Communications. We're in the communication business, so the most important thing is to communicate with your partner and exactly what you've captured. So now they can write to that. And that's always the best partnership. When that works and when you have the relationship like that, that you have a plan getting there, you execute the plan, you come back and say, hey, we got even more than we expected, or, we didn't get quite as much, but we got this, that, and the other thing. Just so when they're writing, they know what they're writing about. And that's so important. And that's when you're watching the news, the best stories that pop have that some sort of element of those of two or three people working together to capture those moments.
Well, we're going to look forward to seeing lots more of your stories pop on News 12. Thank you so much for spending time with us today. We are going to segue now, Ed, into the rapid fire question portion of our podcast. This is where we steal a page from Inside the Actor's Studio. We ask our guests a series of rapid-fire questions meant to elicit a simple answer, maybe a laugh or two. I think we're going to get at least one out of you, Ed. So with your indulgence, here we go. Rapid-fire question number one for Ed Sweeting. What is your favorite news source?
To tell you the truth, I don't watch the news. I live it every day. I come home, I watch cartoons or some other stuff. I don't watch the news. I don't sit there and watch Fox or CNN or get bombarded with it. I live it 10 hours a day and I just don't want to keep going when I get home. It's, it probably wasn't like that, but after 30 years of doing it, that's what it's become.
It's not surprising at all. Okay. Yeah. So maybe this one will be a good one for you. I love that answer though. That's a perfect answer. Rapid fire question number two. What's your favorite social media platform?
Facebook's been the go-to forever, but I'm starting on Instagram now with the catering business. So Instagram would be, it's getting more hits lately than my Facebook. So, and I got Twitter and Truth and Getter. I do a couple of them. So, I watch a lot of Rumble.
Here we go. All right. Rapid fire question number three, coffee, alcohol, or none of the above?
If you want to get into the whole thing, I do keto a lot. So I do iced coffee every day. I have a 44-ounce coffee. Actually, it's my Bucky's cup is holding my phone up. I
There
got
we
this
go.
filled up every morning. I do my cold brew. I make my own after, spending $5-6 a day on coffee every, different places. I just started doing my own cold brew and I sip on that all day and I do one meal at night. And so coffee, definitely caffeine. And sometimes I do it for a refill, but most of the time that gets me through the day.
Love it. Rapid fire question number four. What's your favorite on the run food?
I'm a big guy, so I was a fast food junkie. I mean, it's easy. I'm bored. I'm going in between stories. Easy to grab something. I'm breaking that habit so much. I'm trying to break that habit. So much for rapid fire. I get these long answers. Sorry about that.
That's all right.
Always deadly, but now I food prep. So I have a mix, trail mix in the car that I hit if I really get a hunkering, or I have a couple of protein bars kind of thing. But that's, the last couple of years, that's what I've been my go-to, my fallback.
That's a good plan. And rapid fire question number five. I think I know the answer to this one, though. What do you want to be after you finish this career?
I'm dabbling on, I'm working my way to a food truck kind of thing, catering business. But that's a lot of work, a lot of time on your feet, and it's hard. So I'm not sure how the longevity of that. And I'm also looking into teaching. I mean, I like training a lot of the new photogs that come in. And I've had a stint with Five Towns College that was going to start doing stuff like that, but it kind of fell apart. But it's still up in the air. And who knows? Maybe I'll land in a school district someplace running their TV business. I know a lot of Long Islander have, the AV club has turned into a whole, new thing. And so maybe teaching, I would like to do something like that. But who knows? So far, I'm sticking with News 12, at least for now. I got another 10 years of working in me, so who knows?
Sounds good. Well, I think anybody you teach, and I know you've been teaching people over the years, would greatly benefit from your knowledge and your experience. So I hope that comes together for you, too. Ed, this has been a great conversation. Please let people know how they can find you and your barbecue online.
Big Ed's Sweet Smoke Barbecue, BBQ. At Instagram and Facebook, both those, or EL Sweeting and on Facebook. And
sounds
so
good.
EL Sweeting on Facebook.
EL Sweeting.
Yep. I post some stories that I do, and I try to put pictures and kind of tags sometimes when we have opportunities to do some social media with the stories that we've done. Lately, I've been doing the early morning second live shots with Jen Selick and taking a lot of good social media pictures and trying to get it out there a little bit, but who knows? I don't know if anybody's
all right. Well, we will definitely look you up, Ed, and we will check out that barbecue. Thank you so much for being on the show today. And thank you everyone for listening. Please remember to subscribe to our show, connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at the PR Podcast, and send us a question or a comment. Our intro is by Christopher Apple. You can find him and his fantastic photography on Instagram at Christopher_APPOLDT. Check him out there and hire him for all your photography needs. You can find me online at Jody Fisher on all the socials and on the web at jodyfisherpr.com. We'll see you next time on the PR Podcast.